Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
The dramatic and amazing success of the Thai cave rescue dominated headlines around the world this week. It was a wonderfully uplifting story, wasn't it, of international cooperation and an effort against seemingly impossible odds to rescue these 12 children and their coach. When we first saw that video from the British divers who discovered the trapped boys, one of the team, Adul Samon, acted as an interpreter for the group. He answered the divers in English. It turns out Adul is a stateless person. He's an ethnic Wa from nearby Myanmar. In fact, the Wa tribe has groups, family groups, right across that area, known sometimes as the Golden Triangle. His parents had gotten him over the border when he was 6 years old, and he's in a Christian school in the hope of a better life, just inside the border of Myanmar in Thailand. Now, Adul is one of at least three boys, as well as the coach, Ek, who are stateless. They're seeking refuge in Thailand. The Thai government has said the stateless team members and the coach will now be considered for citizenship, and there are many hopes for these brave boys into the future. Hopes that they probably might not have had, you might wonder, had they not been trapped in the cave. It's funny, isn't it? It's similar to the promise of expedited citizenship that French President Macron made to an illegal African immigrant, dubbed Spider-Man, for scaling the balcony of an apartment building and rescuing a child about to fall. Do you remember that? But what of the millions of other refugees and stateless people who haven't become individually known because of heroic efforts? There's a real question there about what the world knows about the stateless people. Do you know, at the moment, our world is at a time of the greatest mass movement of people displaced by war, civil unrest, famine and natural disaster since the Second World War. So just a few kilometres from the Tham Luang cave system is the Myanmar border, and there are 135 different recognised ethnic groups in Myanmar and in this area. There are other unrecognised groups, like the Rohingya, for instance. And it's from Myanmar that the Rohingya refugees fled ethnic violence to Bangladesh, to the Cox's Bazar refugee camp. Just back from Cox's Bazar is Kayleen Briggs. She's a senior policy advisor in conflict and displacement for World Vision. Kayleen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The cave rescue has actually shone a spotlight on something that's often quite hidden, but a very big problem in that part of the world, the plight of stateless people. So who are the stateless people?
So a stateless person is someone who is not considered a national by any country. So in some cases, that might be a certain ethnic minority group that's not recognized by the state. In other cases, it could be a group of people that's particularly mobile or nomadic across state borders and isn't recognized as belonging to one particular country. And in some cases, it can actually be as simple as just not having any citizenship documents or birth certificates to prove your country of origin or where you were born. So there's a lot of different reasons someone can become stateless, but at the end of the day, it basically means you're not recognized by any country.
So we know that one of the young men, in fact, the one that was translating for the rescuers, proficient in about four different languages, is from a people group known as the Wa people. Now, these people have tribal pockets, I guess, in Myanmar, in China, in Thailand, and I gather this boy, Adul is his name, he'd come across the border from Myanmar.
Yeah, that's right. And we know that there's around 400,000 people living in Thailand who have been officially recognized as stateless persons. But some estimates put the number of stateless people living in Thailand at closer to 3 million. So we know that this is a massive issue that's affecting people from across the region who have found their way into Thailand seeking protection, seeking economic opportunities, and in some cases seeking education for their children, which can be very difficult to come by in parts of Myanmar.
Yeah, and they may indeed come across as kids without parents. They can be considered refugees, of course, in every sense of that word.
Absolutely. And we do know that a lot of the people that have come into Thailand have faced persecution in their countries of origin and are coming to Thailand in search of safety and in search of a better life.
I noticed that the Thai government was saying that it was going to look into whether several of the boys in this particular soccer team, and perhaps even the coach, from my memory, could be given Thai nationality. Now, he said they'd have to look into whether they qualified or not, but that really amplifies the point. Suddenly the international spotlight is on this group of heroic figures, and yet you realize that life for them is not as, you know, it's not like going down to your local soccer club to play in the afternoon, then going off the next day and having all the benefits of being a citizen. Life is tough.
Absolutely. And I think this is an incredible opportunity to, as you say, shine the spotlight on this issue and recognize that as much as we need a solution for these boys, we also need to find a solution for the larger statelessness issues and for the issues that are coming up in people's country of origin, things like the Citizenship Act in Myanmar, which we know has been really problematic in giving people a means to access their right to nationality.
I guess not to be too judgmental about it in one sense, but the borders in this part of the world, which in fact is the area people will remember known as the Golden Triangle, the borders are pretty porous. It's only in, and they change according to the, you know, the conflict of the decade. So some of these people are in tribes that well predate nations. And in a sense, you've got a lot of tribal groups that someone has sort of thrown a rope around and said, okay, now you're inside the rope, therefore you're Thai, you're outside the rope, you're, you know, Burmese in this case. But that doesn't change the reality of the background, culture, language, expectations of these family tribal cultures.
Absolutely, and it doesn't change the fact that all people have a right to a nationality and have a right to seek asylum as well if the place of their nationality isn't providing them with the protection and the guarantee of their basic human rights.
Yes,
so
yes.
As much as the history might be complicated, we do need to ensure that there is an accessible pathway for people to be able to gain recognition of their citizenship and have those basic protections and rights available to them.
Yes, a great point. Our guest is Kayleen Briggs from World Vision, Senior Policy Advisor in Conflict and Displacement. Well, you've come back just now, in fact, from Cox's Bazaar. Now, Cox's Bazaar is in Bangladesh, and this is where how many hundreds of thousands of refugees now are from Myanmar?
So we've had around 700,000 arrivals just since August.
Wow.
And that is on top of a pre-existing population of around 200,000. So we're approaching the 1 million mark of Rohingya people living in the camps in Cox's Bazaar.
And Rohingya is exactly one of those groups we're speaking about, isn't it? These are regarded as an ethnic group in their own right, but not with automatic citizenship rights.
That's correct. They're not recognized as having automatic citizenship in Myanmar, and right now they also don't have refugee status in Bangladesh. So they are essentially a population in limbo at the moment who are essentially stateless.
Hmm. So how are things in the refugee camp with the monsoon season now upon us?
Things are really difficult in the camps in Cox's Bazaar. We're at the height of the monsoon season. July is normally the month where they get the most rain. We've already seen quite extensive sort of small-scale landslides and flooding that have forced people to be displaced even within the refugee camps to areas on higher ground and more flat terrain. So humanitarian organizations like World Vision are working to help people strengthen their shelter kit, reinforce the water and sanitation infrastructure to try to prevent a disease outbreak, and are really just sort of battling against these heavy winds and rains that are threatening this population on a daily basis.
Now, we hear from Myanmar that, you know, there are serious attempts now to bring them back, to resettle them back in the Rakhine State, that part of Myanmar where they came from. But have you seen any evidence of that?
So far, we haven't seen many people returning to Myanmar. What they're telling us in the camps is they do desperately want to be able to return to their homes, but only when the root issues that force them to flee in the first place are rectified and addressed. So things like guaranteeing their safety, again, coming back to that citizenship issue, providing a credible pathway to get citizenship for these people and some semblance of justice and accountability for what's happened. And basically, the refugees were saying, as much as they would like to be able to return home, they're just not comfortable doing that until those issues have been addressed.
Mm. Are things going to improve before the end of the monsoon season, or are they they're there for the long haul, aren't they, really?
I think we've been able to mitigate some of the worst impacts. We have been working very hard to provide sort of these upgraded infrastructure materials to try to prevent more shelters from being affected and prevent the destruction of more infrastructure. But I do think we're at the stage now where we have to be recognizing that we're almost a year in to this mass displacement, and we have to be preparing for a potentially longer-term crisis here. And as much as we are continuing to try to meet the immediate emergency needs, we also have to consider what this is going to look like in 6 months or in 12 months, as uncomfortable a possibility that might be. We have to still be thinking about more durable shelter materials, and we really need engagement from governments like Australia to work on the political level to try to address the root causes of this crisis and to get permission and additional land and support from the government of Bangladesh to host this population longer term.
Yes, indeed. Well, Kaylin, thank you for helping us not to forget that and for shining the light a bit more on the stateless people of that region. Thank you, Kaylin.
Thanks very much.
Kaylin Briggs, Senior Policy Advisor in Conflict and Displacement for World Vision here in Australia.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.